434-1-719. You can also reach us at brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. Send an email to that. Or you can send a WhatsApp message to 266-4862. John Stout is taking care of things technical. We go until 2. I'm Dennis Johnson. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dennis.
Hi, good afternoon.
How do you do?
I'm not doing badly, I think.
Now, two things. First, let me salute the Pod Workers Credit Union on their 50th anniversary. All those pioneers who have, there some who have gone to the great beyond, and there's some who's to us. I think they've done a marvelous job over the last 50 years, and they must be saluted for their foresight.
Let me join you in that, sir. I am a happy member of that organization, so let me join you.
Welcome.
In extending your congratulations.
And the other thing, I heard talk about the buses that are to come from China.
Yeah, that's what we were told. There were buses from China, but because of COVID and everything else, that shipment was delayed or something like that. That was the last...
Mr. Relentless was asking if you canceled the order, but I understood from the chairman of the transport board some time ago on a news item on your station, or our station,
mm-hmm.
They said that the buses were finished and they were now being transported to the docks to be loaded to come down to Barbados. I'm more sure I heard that on your station.
Okay.
So I don't know if that is a fact or not, but that could always be checked.
Well, which is why I said it might be too late to say we don't want the buses anymore, depending on whether it's been paid for and shipped or in transit or whatever else.
Whatever. Yeah, the other thing I'd like to agree on is the information that Nasser, that Mr. Nasser, was spouting in terms of the 25 people who might have supported somebody to vote, support a candidate for a vote and things, and looking for a handout. I think that a lot depends on us, on the people who, there must be a reason for you trying to support or trying to get your party or the party's favor or the politician's favor in parliament. And it's not everybody who tries to look for a handout from those persons. They do it based on their own integrity. A lot of people, mm-hmm. And everyone recognizes that in Barbados, as you were saying, also that the majority of our population, in fact, I would like to know if you could tell me what the percentage of the population is in terms of black people in Barbados and white people in Barbados.
Sir, I have no idea what the latest figures are, but I think from old statistics, the black Barbadian is still in the majority. I now question what the second highest ethnic group in Barbados is. I think the East Indian population may have gone ahead of the other ethnic groups represented in Barbados over, you know, the last, I would say, 20, 25 years.
And that's also significant. Because, you know, every time somebody opened their mouth, or most people open their mouth, they all talk about the poor Barbadian. You know, and one has to recognize, we know the kind of controversies you have right now because of the COVID-19,
mm-hmm.
and we know that most people in the hotel industry would be separated from their jobs. And we know we have to do a lot more to make sure that we carry Barbados through the sea successfully.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the time has come to when we need to get more assistance. Maybe we need to give more assistance to our people, to our fellow man. I heard somebody call me one day and told me that they had some malicious guy who called his neighbor and said that the van is going to come and pick you up now because you got COVID-19. And that woman was, I understand from my source, that she was over 75 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that woman cried and cried and cried and called the same person that told me about it. You know, these things are not, apart from the social media and these kind of outbursts and these kind of robocalls and things like that, we need to cease this kind of nonsense from going on in our country. And I think that the young people have got to become more and more aware that this COVID-19 is a very, very destructive thing. And I agree with you. You're listening to the television and these kind of things about the mask and not the mask and the legislator and not the legislator. We need to get a proper definition on that because whatever we hear on the television, we take it as the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was hearing on the television once some time ago that they don't even know if it really happened in Canada. In Canada, a scientist came out and said that it might have been somewhere else first. And these kind of things. So we have to take, as the old people would say, with a grain of salt sometimes.
A pinch of salt. But they say salt ain't good for you. So apparently some people keeping away from even the grain of salt. So
That's
the problem is this, right? Well, for me, That's just my feeling. I could only tell you what I think. In the past, when there was no social media, when there was no widespread use of cable television, we would wait on the radiodiffusion and the radio station to tell us. The World Health Organization would release data and we would accept it as being gospel. Today, information travels faster than the speed of thought. And once that happens, what we call the credible sources, that's what we keep calling them, the credible sources, that's radio, television, GIS, have to keep catching up. So sometimes they confirm what was said before, sometimes they deny it, sometimes they walk it back. Sometimes you get two scientists having different opinions about the same thing. Now I see information online that the virus could have been as wrong as far back as October last year. They just keep changing parameters and changing reports, how many people are going to die. They keep saying you don't know how many people really dead because not everybody who dead is being tested to see what they died from. It's like AIDS. People keep saying people don't die of AIDS. What they die of is complications because they have AIDS. So they have pneumonia, their heart stopped, they have this. So people who have diabetes and people who have hypertension, when COVID, because of COVID, they die, they say, well, don't say it's COVID. It's because of their hypertension and their diabetes. And so we have these arguments going on and on.
I agree with you. My final point is, I've been listening to somebody, I think it's one day, a lady some time ago last week, I think, talk about they need more press conferences and things like that.
Yeah.
Need the reporters to make some more questions.
That's what she said, yeah.
Yeah, well, every time I heard a press conference and reporters come out and they ask a question, how many people got it? How many people had it? How many people gone home? How many people do this? How many people do that? And they ask the same questions over and over and over again. And to say that the COVID czar does not have any knowledge, he's a sociologist by profession, doesn't have any questions about, you prefer to hear from your doctor sometimes because your doctor might have some, his medical terminologies might not be known by the czars, I think that is total nonsense. The czar is a well-educated sociologist. I think he has degrees in that kind of thing. He's had experience in dealing with other epidemics across the place, and I think he's doing a fantastic job. And therefore, we need our reporters, because all they do is to report. They ask questions and they report, but they need to do some in-depth analysis before the press conferences, so they can ask a lot more questions in the interest of the John and GM public out here. I think that that's where our downfall is. Yes, it's good to have a press conference, but if you have a press conference, only ask about figures. It does not make any sense because those figures come over on nearly every newscast in the course of the day. But you must get into more in depth. Where are we going? How are we going to look after the tourism? Is there any thought process on that yet? Anybody studying anything about how we can, if the COVID dies down, are we going to resuscitate barbarians and things like that? Those kind of questions you need to ask.
So here's the thing about this question about the statistics put out by the COVID czar and other people that I have not heard. I saw a report today, for example, that 8 more people have left isolation. And this is the part I want to quote directly. After the second test has come back negative. And I've asked the reporters who've been there, I've asked various people who've sent me information. Who are we testing? When we say we conducted 1,500 tests today. Are these 1,500 new tests or included in that 1,500 are those in isolation that we've tested for the first or the second time? If you give me that information, I would know whether I need to pull 20 out of that figure and say, okay, 1,300 new people have come forward to be tested, or only 5 new people came forward to be tested. To me, it would just let me know a better idea of who's getting tested. Because I get WhatsApp messages saying, for example, we would like to be tested. We were asked and we were told, oh, there's no reason for you to be tested because you didn't travel or you traveled before the 15th or, you know, you're not showing symptoms, so we're not testing you.
Yeah.
Now, if that's being told to people who've come forward to be tested, then I think we need to see who we're testing and why we're testing them. That's the challenge.
It seems to leave us to determine some mathematics. It seems to leave us to say, well, if you tested 150, I know you're saying that same latest test, 8 gone free. Mm-hmm. So we have to subtract that 8 from the 150.
From the 150, correct. That's what I was getting at.
Come up one time and say, in this second batch of testing, X, and give us the numbers precisely as you were saying. I think
correct.
That needs to happen.
The 20 people in isolation were tested today in addition to 15 right. new people or 20 new people. And then I have a better idea of how we're testing at home. Yep.
Thank you for your time, and go have a blessed one and keep yourself safe. Remember, wash your hands and wear the mask.
Yes, sir. I have one, a mask hanging, because it can't come across my mouth right now because I was so worried before. But my mask is here, and I'm trying to be safe. Brass Dex, good afternoon. Hello? Okay, come off the radio and come back to the phone. Hello? All right, that person is still having lunch. Let's try another one. Brass Dex, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, ma'am.
Khalil Kofdawala here. Dennis, how are you?
I'm not bad at all. How are you?
I'm very well. No, I'm calling in today with regard to the matter surrounding the Deputy Commissioner of Police.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the facts are very clear with regard to this matter, and I feel that, that there is some need to clarify them. The Protective Services Commission would have appointed Mr. Williams to this post, and in doing so, they would have erred in law, in that they would have appointed him to a post that did not strictly exist. People know this. That had obtained for a year. He was acting in this position, and no one realized until very recently. This week, the Attorney General has acknowledged the mistake and expressed contrition for it, said that it was regrettable, and assured the country that at the soonest, earliest opportunity, that it would be rectified. Now, I would have been very displeased if there had been no forthcoming apology, because it is these kinds of mistakes that really are unacceptable. Mm-hmm. However, when you look around the world today, you find many people, particularly in the political class, are unwilling to apologize for their actions, but invariably we're all human beings, and human beings make mistakes. The civil service is a large behemoth of a machine that often is a barrier to much progress in this country, and it's because of its complexity that it lands us in very low down in the ease of doing business index, etc. And in this particular instance, it fell down in being able, in using its complexity and its red tape in order to identify this mistake. So a mistake was made. It has been acknowledged, recognized, and it has been apologized for. And the matter need not go any further in my view. It speaks well and it bodes well for our democracy that people expressed a concern about something. And that it forced the political elite and the political directorate to address those concerns. And I think it bodes very well for our democracy. And it was addressed. In addition to that, the claims of authoritarianism really are misplaced, because authoritarian leadership does not apologize when it makes mistakes. So clearly that is not an accusation that can hold any water. So this incident, if nothing else, has proven to me and to many ordinary Barbadians like myself that democracy is alive and well in this country.
Ma'am, I have to tell you that one of the things I think we need to be cognizant of, and that's one of the things I try to do when I sit here, is to differentiate between an argument that starts off being factual, and then when it slips into being colored by what I call political decisions. And it is acceptable to me that you will get both in almost everything that's done. It happened in the past administrations, it will happen with this administration, and it will happen with future administrations. One of the things, however, that I find worrying about some of the comments is when they become personal or they ascribe motives and it colors the person appointed. In other words, there's nothing wrong with saying the Attorney General should not. There's nothing wrong with saying the law did not allow for. is when people say the person was given the position because so and so and so and so, and that is taken up and held up as the reason for it. To me, it then puts a stain on the contribution the person may have made, the organization they work for, and it causes unnecessary focus to be placed on an institution that we're supposed to have confidence in. And it undermines, for me, the respect that should be given to persons who do their best and through no fault of their own get into these kinds of situations. That's what I would like us to not get into. It is unfortunate, and I've heard it far too many times in various things that have happened in this country. But I get your point. I can't disagree with what you said at all. I thank you for the contribution. 434-1790, 266-4862, and brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. John Stout is the technical operator, producer. I'm Dennis Johnson, and the host until 2 o'clock. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. You know, I tried to answer this WhatsApp message online. I will try it again. To whom it may concern, why does VOB allow the same people to get through to Brass Tacks every day, every week, while there are others who cannot? I've heard three people today who have called into VOB earlier this week, and the same persons have already called into today's program. This is not acceptable. My response online was, that's because we do not have equipment that shows the identity of callers. Person came back to me and said, I'm not speaking to a novice. You speak to the caller before he or she is connected, so you have to know who or what is connected. You don't have to have equipment to see. I'm sure you're not deaf and you can hear, because we all know that the calls to Brass Tacks are screened before transferred. Okay, a couple things. One, the calls are not screened. The technical operator producer, who's doing three things at once, operating, listening to what I'm saying, listening to what the person online is saying, answering the phone, and listening to the playback all at once. So when he answers the phone, or she answers the phone in the case of Michelle, as I've tried to explain to some people who tried to have conversations with me when I answer the phone, all we can say is, Brass Tacks, good morning, hold on. Yes, we do know some of the voices, because I know some of the voices from having done this for a long time. If you look at the board, as I did when I sat here at 10 o'clock this morning, there was one call on the board. One. If there is one call on the board, what is the technical operator supposed to do when I say, good morning, I'm Dennis Johnson, this is Down to Brass Tacks, and go to the call? What is he going to say? This is a voice I recognize from yesterday when he was not the producer, and do nothing? Or does he put the call through? I find it extremely difficult when people who do not know what we do swipe at the people in here who are professional and do what they do. When I do this, people say I'm thin-skinned. It's not being thin-skinned. It is not liking what I consider to be a slap at my colleagues who are doing the best that they can to make this program what it is. Do I like hearing the same persons every day? No, I don't. Especially when I sit here as a host and I hear them say one thing, and then as producer, I hear them say the same thing to another moderator and sometimes misquote what they said when we had a conversation. And then after our breaks, because people listen on the radio, when you come back to the program, they're not ready to take the call, and then we have these lapses that we have to fill by talking. It's not a fair comment. And I do understand that listeners don't like to hear the same people saying the same thing over and over, because they write and they send various messages saying so. Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dennis.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Dennis Johnson.
This is he.
Yeah, this is Muhammad Nasser again. Sorry to call back and just hear you talking, but first, I call for this, but I say that you have to tell the people at the station to determine who to talk to and who they don't want to talk to. Like, if you don't want to talk to me, you just, the already just cut me out. That's your station. But I called a clip, something, Mr. Johnson. I'm sorry I had to call you back today.
I want you to understand that what I am saying is not to do with voting, Mr. Johnson. I am saying that everybody votes, right? The people who give $1 million, the people who give $5, and the people who mobilize and vote all over here and fight to get a vote, they all vote. What I am saying that you have to appreciate that you cannot give all the wealth to 2 and 3 people, and then the other people who struggle and fight for you and go there and their lives are being threatened. And I was at a meeting, and I wouldn't call the clerk, I don't want to embarrass anyone, 2 parties, I can say, but it's only 2 of them. There was a meeting at Queen's Park, and a party had just lost the election. And I heard a big racketeering and thing outside, cussing and behaving, that was inside the place. And I came out, and I saw a big black man with a long knife telling an old man pushing a snow cone car, if you don't move from down here, he would jerk this knife in it that he's not a BLP or DLP or, well, NP supporter. I discovered that a minister was there, a former minister was there, and I look at the minister and say, you stand here and let that fellow jerk knife through that old man. He said, if you jerk it through, who going to be here to witness for him? I had to go and stand between the man and the fellow with the knife. And I moved the man car. The man said, I move, I jerk it in there. I said, well, jerk it through me. And I moved the man car and carry it away up in Queen's Park. You know something right there and overturn the man car just because he didn't support the party that they support? What I'm saying, Mr. Johnson, is this idea that you must not be able to demand from politicians, but they can demand from you, got to change. People need work. People need opportunities. You know, it's just like a politician who will tell me, I won't give you no work to do. He ain't telling me, this is a boy, he ain't telling me, he ain't giving no work to do by employing 25 people. And 24 voting for him. That makes sense? That's all I'm trying to say, Mr. Johnson.
Okay, sir.
I got to be shared.
I got you. Thank you. The WhatsApp message says, an environmental issue at work, namely a noxious odor, put me at the polyclinic's fast track this morning. I was seen by the doctor and waited all this time for the pharmacy holding number 99, produced the only ID I have, which I produced at the records section when I arrived this morning, only to be told by the person at the pharmacy that she can't accept my photo driver's license. I must produce my Barbados ID card to have the medication. Let me double check something before I make a comment. I have my Barbados driver's license in my hand with my photograph on it, and right there on line number 2, right under my whole long name, says Barbados ID with the number. So if the person wanted your Barbados ID card number, it's on your driver's license. I don't understand why people get this issue about national ID cards. National ID cards carry a number, they carry your picture. Your driver's license carry the same number, perhaps a more recent picture, and another number besides the ID number, which is your license number. So now they have 2 numbers to trace you by. The only thing it may not have on it is your date of birth, because I don't see a date of birth on mine. It has an address, and it has your national ID card number. So, again, I suppose the person is following policy, which says a national ID card, but the number is on the driver's license. If that's what they wanted, it's on the license. I think you should get your medication, but that's just me. Brass Tacks, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Johnson.
Good afternoon.
Right. I was calling. I know I made several attempts to call the program over the month. This is probably my 3rd time in, and I'm 50-something years. Many times I've attempted to call into the program, and it's often inundated with the frequent callers. Your response to the young lady just now that talk about not being able to get through because of the regular callers, I find...
It's not a lady. It's just a WhatsApp. I don't know if it's a man or woman.
Mm-hmm. But they're talking about the lady. Okay, right. You were reading her.
I was reading a WhatsApp. I don't know if it's a male or female. I didn't check. It's just a WhatsApp message.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is that for... Oftentimes, persons who do not make regular contributions to the program are seeking to get in. And the program is bottlenecked by the regular callers.
Correct.
And I think that by now, the length of time that BOV have been at it and the use of the availability of technology in the marketplace is such that this should no longer be a recurring problem. Because if you have five people in the queue and you notice that you have five lines that are waiting to come in, mm-hmm. when you get to a caller who is a regular voice, a familiar voice on the program, you mm-hmm. should tell them, I believe, I am suggesting, that you could say to them, listen, we have some other callers on the line. We want to make sure that there are not any new callers. And if you don't mind, call back in half an hour, call back tomorrow. But we want to go down and see if we have any newer contributions coming in. Mm-hmm. This is a suggestion, as a way to not frustrate, because, as I said, because of the ongoing situation, there are certain things that I attempted to make as contributions, but I just got fed up and frustrated
and didn't go. Let me say to you that we even had at one point, when we used to have more than one number, a number that we said designated for new callers or for serious intervention. So we've tried various things. The comment I made earlier, though, that at 10 o'clock there was just one caller. There are callers who start mm-hmm. calling the program prior to 10 o'clock, sir. I know that from the producer's chair, right?
Mm-hmm.
They start calling early. There are people who call from different phones to different numbers to tie up the number. That's why sometimes when the moderator asks for a call and you put them in, there is nobody there. Right? So those are challenges that the producer faces from time to time. I could speak about mm-hmm. that because my job is the producer. I host from mm-hmm. time to time.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you. When I sit as the producer, as I said, and I hear the same callers who have made contributions on previous days come back again, I know it must be frustrating for the listeners. But there are times when they are the only people on the line. Three of them, four of them, one behind the other. And it's difficult for the producer. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But if you have five persons in a queue and mm-hmm. three are familiar, you should ask them to rotate.
To rotate?
Call back in 20 minutes. Call back in 20 minutes. We want to clear the queue and see if,
we get other callers.
Yeah.
I take what you say.
Guarantee that
they will come back. They're the ones who stay on the line so for half an hour. Because sometimes you hear them say when they come on, I've been waiting for 45 minutes.
Because I don't know if these are, they are so full of bright ideas that they think that the nation can't do without their contribution. Either that, or they like hearing themselves. But I think it is frustration hearing the same people over and over again. Anyway,
let me just say this to you quickly before you make the other point. Eh? Mm-hmm. Let me say this to you mm-hmm. as well. When you've made those comments to them, and we have, mm-hmm. they tell you that people call them and ask them to make contributions on their behalf. They're not doing it for themselves. And that's what they say. That's what they say.
I suspect that. But we want to hear diversity.
I suspect that too.
You want to encourage the nation to come out. Because you don't want persons to come out of sportspersons. And, they're appearing as sportspersons for other persons. But encourage persons. You want to encourage variety into the program. And you want persons to make novel presentations. This is not an English language case that if your English isn't, if you perceive your English isn't a scratch, then that you should share
away from talking.
Yeah,
people. So a lot of time, a lot. Listen. Let me tell you, that's not the point. The comment they keep making, and trust me, I've heard it from callers too. Is that I want you to tell the moderator, say so and so and so. People know my voice. John is nodding. That's the one we get most regularly when we answer the phone, sir. I could tell you that. Tell me what you wanted to talk about, though. Listen, let me tell you, I take your point. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. Because diversity of opinion is what drives this program. I agree with you.
Right.
I can't
disagree. And colorfulness of speech. You don't want to hear, the colorfulness of speech, approach, of presentation, of use of it. You want to hear whatever variety there is over here. And I remember long ago, when many persons, even some educated persons, a camera comes in front of them, they're cussing, speaking Beijing, all of a sudden they attempt
they're changing English. Yeah, because they're not accustomed to using it.
And then you hear the guy on the block, you wonder, well, he sounds very, his voice is not painful to the ears because he's speaking as a person actually does.
Fair enough.
Anyway.
Tell me.
On to my two contributions that you wanted to make.
Okay.
Has the South Coast sewage problem been solved? Or has it been or has it been controlled?
I think it has been controlled, and there may be further work to be done on it, because I have heard nothing that says the outflow pipe is complete and that all other works that were supposed to be done on the sewage treatment plant to bring it to a higher grade has been completed. So I presume it is controlled and that further work will be done, or is to be done. Let me put it that way.
Okay. The reason why I asked that is now that they have, now, I don't know what first caused the problem, but I assume, this is a bare assumption, that sandals, they add enough sandals to the sewage line, they're coming on as such a significant inflow into the sewage line at the higher point of the sewage line caused the problems downstream. Have you noticed that all the problems occurred on the roads, if one likes, from the St. Lawrence area and coming down, and then occurred further up? I don't know if the system was designed to handle the volume of a sandals. And now you have sandals now at approximately another 100 rooms. Now that there are no tourists on the island, and they won't be for a while, I would like to suggest, and I think that the powers that be should be looking seriously at digging up this entire South Coast Road and putting down a new, adequate pipeline to handle whatever are the new projects coming on stream. Because they're
you would prefer the line to be run down the South Coast Road in addition to the outflow, In other words, to take the sewage from off the properties on the South Coast to the plant.
Because the problem seems to be not the connecting lines coming onto the mainstream, but it seems to be that the mainstream itself.
Okay, I got
because
you.
That occurred at the head of the mainstream. So, if these systems were put in place to handle, let's say, 100 gallons.
I got you. And you have more and more signing onto it, and it couldn't handle the capacity.
Right.
Yeah.
Dig up the entire road now that we can afford, because before the flow of traffic was too significant, and the level of inconvenience, not only to locals but to visitors,
would have led to
higher degree of frustration.
Correct.
Now is the time to dig up the road and put in capacity within
for expansion.
That if we have double the amount of construction and metal plant coming into the system, that are able to handle it. There's no better time than to dig it up than right now. Dig up the entire road from top to bottom, right to the outflow station, and have the redundancy in there, have enough capacity to deal with whatever will come in the next 20 or 50, in the next 50 years.
Sir, the only thing they may tell you is, do we have the money to do it now? But I don't disagree with you in principle, because there are very little cars on the road, so, and no children at school, so the disruption will be minimal. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. But you remember that.
And
a lot of these projects are never financed locally.
True. You got them from, I got you.
The IDB often finance projects which they see the developmental impact is so positive that it lends itself to easy approval, if you like. And Barbados have been doing quite well at being able to attract finance because the money, as long as there's perception that the money will be put to the use to which it's been requested.
Okay.
The other point is the matter of this spreader larceny that we've had in Barbados. Now, I'm a farmer, among other things.
Okay.
And I believe it is high time that the retailers of produce in this country, that they should have the burden of proof to demonstrate that they have acquired their produce legitimately. Right now, as it is, the standard burden of proof in the country is that a person is innocent until they're proven guilty. There are some countries in the world in which you're guilty until you prove yourself innocent. You have to prove that you're innocent. And I think that predatory larceny has proven itself such a headache for so many generations of Barbadians, police forces, and government, that it is about time that this thing be taken by the horn. Recently, I've heard that the government had established a predatory larceny unit within the Royal Barbados Police Force. But that itself is nothing new, because you've always had police who did it. And even though you will perhaps have a bit more focus on it, they will still be faced with the same problems. How do you prove that a man who is selling, who have 100 pounds of potatoes on his tray, did not steal them? The burden of proof should be on him. And as long as, if I am a retailer of produce, and I'm selling in a tray out of my van, and I know at any time the police can turn up and ask me, sir, prove you have these products here, There's your receipt. Prove that you own these. We have a report that such and such was taken. We're doing an investigation. We want to rule you out. If I know that that is the case, I will make sure the person from whom I buy produces his receipt and his ID number on it. And I can see his ID and I can see his receipt, because I can tell him, I don't care what you're saying. I need to make sure that I don't get locked up on a result of buying from you.
No, let me ask you
and
this question.
If he's buying from some person else, go ahead.
No, go ahead. If he's buying from somebody else, go ahead.
If he's buying from some person, if the person who is selling to the van or to the hawker is buying from the plantation, he can make sure that the plantation gives him a receipt and that he keeps his receipt. He won't say, well, I lost it or I threw it away. Because he knows he has a certain burden of proof that he must maintain, and therefore he must cover his tracks. He must cover his bases. And the burden is on him to keep his receipts and then be able to prove at all time that all the produce in his position was acquired from the source. Even if the source acquired it from illegal gain, then that he is covering his base. He now passes the buck to the other person.
To somebody else, which is what I was about. Which is what I was about to ask you.
He cannot be a police. Right, you don't know who you're buying from. Some person comes to sell to you. You don't know where they come from, but you're a person who is selling to an end user. Your interest is in making a buck.
Which is what I was about to ask you. You said you're a farmer, right? Do you have proof that you are a farmer? Because if you come to me and say, look, Dennis, I have 10 acres. I am growing onions. I could provide you with X pounds of onions every week. If I don't ask you, show me you're a farmer, take me to your farm so I could see you or whatever it is. I could see your certificate, your VAT certificate, whatever. I just say, okay, fine, no problem. Once you give me the, 50 pounds of onions a week, here's your check. You can get away. And the day you don't have 50 pounds, you could go and take it from somebody else. So I take your point. The only thing is, how do you, as an independent producer, a farmer, protect your interest by doing what? What are some of the things you would tell people to do? To get registered, to have this, whatever.
When I'm selling you my produce, I sell you a certain amount of produce, I give you a detailed receipt. The receipt doesn't... Now, I went 3 months ago and I bought 6 rods of sweet potatoes. I didn't even get a receipt. I mean, the supervisor is in the ground and he's moving fast. Everybody's hustling him. He's taking money and he's telling you where you can dig from here to here.
Right.
And that is understandable because he just want to keep things moving. And he want to keep people happy. He want to make sure that there's no bill or not bad luck. But as long as he has to produce receipts now, he can produce, write certain basic information on the receipt. When he gets into the field, he put on 2 rods or whatever, how many pounds. But he knows that he's integral to solving the problem that has affected him. So if it means that when the farmer is finished, he has to then turn around and weigh what the farmer has received. He's selling by the rod. But then he weighs what the farmer has produced from the field and saying, this is your proof that you have now acquired from your 6 rods 90 pounds of potatoes.
Right. Okay.
And I'm therefore selling you 90 pounds of potato. I'm not selling you per pound, I'm selling you per rod. But this is your proof when
you stopped and asked, why do you have this? Okay, I got you.
Yeah. So the other thing is that in tandem with that, is that this particular larceny unit in the Royal Barbados Police Force should be requested, should be mandated to report to the public, not just to the minister or to the attorney general or the commissioner of the police, but he should be required to report to the public every month, every quarter, as to the results of his hard work. Because often if you don't have a reporting system that seeks to critique what a person is doing, the person may become disenchanted because you may feel, I spend top of mud. Nobody's particularly interested in it. They give me this as a punishment because they know I can't achieve anything.
Right.
But as long as he has to report to the public, he's going to get into them. He's going to say, okay, up to today, in the month of April, we conducted 90 inspections and we found that of the 90 persons, 75 of them were compliant and 15 are under review. Of those 15, 5 are of suspicious nature, which will take further investigation. And if he knows that he is coming to the public every month, his unit then has to be ready to be able to explain to the public what they're doing. So the politician switches the burden from him. whether it's the Minister of Agriculture or the Commissioner or the Attorney General, to the police force. And the police force now know that he's given teeth, because once the burden of proof is now on the person who is in possession of the produce, then from there, it is the courts. If you can't produce it, and because for every system will take a time to gradually move itself.
How does this stop?
In 6 months' time, we know that we will have this system working. It will get better and better, so that the problem will not be solved in the first 3 months of the program, but we can say by next year. And that you don't then lead to all these farmers now who are coming up, and a lot of persons are now going into farming.
Which is what I was about to ask you. What would you're getting my questions answered before I ask it, which is a good thing. I was about to ask you, what would stop one quote unquote registered farmer from stealing from another? For whatever reason. Put him out of business, don't like the competition, need to fill an order. How do you stop that? If it exists.
Well, you see, in every system, you will not be able to end everything.
Gotcha.
So you need the farming body. This is where you need the farming body to come together now and put their heads together, because that's the part that I didn't think of. And I don't have all the answers. I can tell you what we need, what we should do with the police force, and what we should do with those having the projects. But by whoever is in charge of this unit, I don't know if it's to the level of station sergeant or assistant commissioner or whatever, but hopefully the head of this unit should be of enough seniority that they can get things done, and that when they call a meeting and they seek to meet with farmers, farmers are anxious to meet. They want to get results from their hard work. And as long as you ask them to come together and ask them for a solution, they will come up with a solution. And the solution will be what police will come up with everything. But once you have the farmers cooperative working together and they know that the screws are being tightened, you start on the outside, that's the person who's selling, and then you come in a little further, the person who's wholesaling, you come in a little further, the person who is producing, and then you know then after you've squeezed on all the outside, you get all the moisture on the outer layers out, and then the moisture only remains in the middle.
In the middle.
That's where then you focus your attention and you finish all your creative energies and your resources and saying, okay, that will significantly, because if a person know that when you come to them, the first thing you must do before a person is prepared to buy is show me your ID card. And I'm looking at your ID card and I'm looking at the picture of the card, and if the ID don't look like you, I say, no, I ain't buying it for you. That ID, you need to get a new ID and come back to me. Because I don't want to get myself in trouble with the law at the end of the day. That is
fair enough. Sir, I have to tell you that one of the challenges that most, I think, persons involved in the farming, every area of it, whether it's animal husbandry, whether it's growing crops, the two things they talk about all the time is Prairie Larceny and the attack of monkeys and other things that destroy their crops. And if there is one way that we can make farming attractive to the population, the wider population, more people involved in it, and growing more of the things we need, the better we will be. It will take some time, and I agree with you, and it will also take a change in attitude, I suppose, from those who say, let me see the cheapest way I could get this. And because to put some of the systems you would like to have put in place is going to be costly. And I hear people talking about drones and electric fencing and, you know, having watchmen and various other things that cost. So you're adding layers of cost. Yeah, you're adding layers of cost to. Correct. You're adding layers of a cost in a market that is not perhaps wide enough for you to handle that kind of cost. So to start on the end, you start and work your way back. Sounds like a good plan. Just get everybody to buy into it. That's the hardest part. Because you'll always have those who break ranks.
The market is the same extent fickle too, because you have certain periods of time where you have a glut in the market and a lot of persons selling the same thing, which drives the price down. The other time where you have prolonged droughts and you may have loss of crops. The other time where you have floods, which affect the price. So these last two things are acts of God. So you can't be spending money in areas where you are depending on the society to be honest. Honesty, if it's not in the natural nature of men, which it should be, then it must be enforced. Honesty sometimes is only brought about with penalty. As long as there's no penalty, you will see how many persons who you would think are really honest, but you would see how dishonest they become. because there's no penalty.
They could get away with it. Well said, sir. Thank you very much indeed.
All right.
All right.
Thank you, too.